You're listening to the BBC World Service. This is NewsHour, coming to you live from London with James Kamarasamy. Calls for countries to take urgent action to mitigate climate change seem to come along as frequently as the extreme weather events, which provide the clearest evidence for the argument. The first report from the UN's Global Commission on Adaptation is different, because rather than focusing on reducing carbon emissions, it's all about how we can and must change the way that we live in order to adapt to climate change that is already happening and is inevitable. And importantly, it argues that such adaptations could actually bring net benefits. Here's the former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon launching the Commission's report in The Hague today.
It is with great privilege and marked by great urgency that I announce the launch of the Global Commission on Adaptation to raise the visibility of adaptation and focus on solutions.
Well, the report is called Adapt Now, a Global Call for Leadership on Climate Resilience. It says an investment of $1.8 trillion over the 10 years from 2020 to 2030 could yield net benefits of more than $7 trillion. We're joined now by Andrew Steer, a member of the Commission and the CEO of the World Resources Institute, who joins us from our Washington studio. Welcome to NewsHour. Perhaps let's start with terms, if we like, at the beginning. Adaptation. We hear a lot about mitigation. For listeners, what is the difference?
Well, we first of all, of course, have to try and stop climate change. But of course, climate change is already here. And so we need to adapt. We need to get used to the fact that already temperatures have risen by 1 degree Celsius, and that already is hurting 500 million small farmers around the world. It's threatening a billion people in coastal areas. We just saw this week, tragically, the Hurricane Dorian. Science predicts that extreme weather events will get more intense, and they certainly are. So we have to both aim to stop climate change getting worse, but we need to work much, much harder to adapt to that climate change.
Where should the priority be? If we stop, we don't need to adapt, surely.
Well, if we could stop, we wouldn't need to adapt. But unfortunately, it's already happening. And even if we were to cut all greenhouse gas emissions to zero right away, still in many decades to come, things will get worse. The scientists are almost unanimous on that. So this is not a choice of trying to stop climate change or trying to adapt. Unfortunately, we need to do both. In terms of where we start, we need to ask the question, who is being most affected? And of course, it's a moral imperative as well as a environmental and an economic imperative. Those that did least cause the problem are those that are most threatened. And so agriculture in Africa, poor farmers, up to 30% declines in their yields are likely to happen. Insects used to die out over winter, just a 1 degree increase in Celsius temperature means they now live through the winter, and then they wreak havoc, of course, because they multiply.
So what are the key types of adaptation that you're calling for?
Well, the important thing is to really sort of change the mindset. For the last 100 years, as we've been doing modern planning, we've assumed that the past trends are a good predictor of the future. And unfortunately, that's no longer the case. So we really need to assume that the future is not only going to become more difficult, but actually more unpredictable. So whether you are a mayor of a city or a prime minister of a country or a village leader in Bangladesh, you still need to be thinking about the future, and you need to ask the question, who's most affected? And so there are some very simple things that are happening. Crops are being changed. So in Costa Rica, they're producing somewhat less coffee, more oranges. In Bangladesh, some very simple things. Instead of chickens, they're now, some farmers are investing in ducks because they can swim. So very, very simple things. But then at the other end of the spectrum, massively sophisticated things. So the Thames Barrier, for example, has lowered risk, which has enabled the financial district in the east of London to grow up. And so we both have the relatively simple at one level to the highly sophisticated. And we need a really comprehensive approach. And we need to have altogether more sort of political engagement in this subject.
Well, yes. I mean, is there a political aspect to what you're arguing? You talked about those least able to cope with the changes perhaps being unfairly impacted by them. Is there a sense that you have a sort of a radical agenda, politically quite radical agenda here?
Well, the interesting thing is that 20 governments at the head of government level, including China and India and the United Kingdom and the Netherlands and many, many other countries, African countries, small island countries, have all sponsored this exercise. So people are worried. I mean, if you go, obviously, to small islands, I was in Fiji a couple of months ago meeting with the finance ministers of the 12 Pacific Island countries. They don't need to be told this is important. This is obviously important. But actually, around the world now, countries are starting to realize, their citizens are saying, for heaven's sake, what's happening? I mean, in Florida, there is now a huge sort of public demand for action on climate change. And so, yes, it's a political issue, but it's not a, it's not, I mean, it's radical at one level, but it affects all of us. It doesn't just affect those that are threatened by flooding in Bangladesh. It affects actually those who are living in the United Kingdom or any advanced country too. We're all in this.
And very briefly, Andrew Steele, what about the this idea that this can bring net benefits? Do you need to make the economic argument?
I think so. I think we really haven't been, we haven't had a strong narrative for politicians. And on the climate prevention side, we now have a very strong narrative that actually addressing climate change is actually good for your economy. On the adaptation side, most politicians have thought this is sort of rather boring, it's expensive money, and it won't yield benefits for a long time. And what we've shown that actually putting money smartly into adaptation will yield returns 4-1, up to 10-1 in some areas. So this is very, very good economics as well.
Andrew Steele, thanks very much.